Matt Combs, thanks for joining me. It's good to talk to you.
Great to be here.
Please summarize your history with John Hartford. You work with him, you were friends, and but it went even deeper than that.
Yeah, well, I first met John at the Davis Kidd bookstore, and there was a book written by Charles Wolfe from MTSU called The Devil's Box. And it was about the history of Southern fiddling. And I just met a guy by the name of Fraser Moss, who at the time was 88 years old, and he was the dean of the Tennessee Fiddlers. And I had met him at the Wilson County Fair Fiddle Contest when I first moved to town in 1997. And Fraser and I hit it off, and he invited me to this book signing where he was going to be playing. And Hartford was there with his banjo and was there to back up Fraser Moss for this book signing. So I first met him there, and Fraser invited me over to John's house. So we had a little jam session, and from there we just started hanging out more, and I started working under his employ, doing transcriptions for a book that he was working on about the fiddler Ed Haley. So that was kind of my first hangs with John, and then we just became friends, and I moved up, had the good fortune of finding a rental house about four houses up the river from John up there in Madison. So I went over there a bunch and just played fiddles and ate dinner and drove around and had a good time.
And then you were in the string band for about how long?
Well, this is towards the end of John's life. You know, John had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and his hands, well, I would go out occasionally when Mike Compton couldn't make it, I'd play mandolin, but his hands started giving out and he couldn't play. So I would go out and I'd play the fiddle. And that, I mean, it was sad because John couldn't play the fiddle, you know, and he was, but I was happy to do it and I was happy to help out in any way I can because I love John and I love to be around him. And so that went on for probably about the last, I don't know, 9 months of his touring career. And then it all kind of came to an end in Dripping Springs, Texas. This was his last gig that he played down there in Austin. And it was at that point we drove the bus back home from the gig directly and took him to the hospital, you know, for the kind of sort of long goodbye there. He ended up going back to the house, but at that point he was done. Everything was kind of shutting down at that point.
And he passed away in 2001.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then the material that John composed that makes up this book, John Hartford's Mammoth Collection of Fiddle Tunes, what did you know about this repertoire and what form it was in back then and through these subsequent years? And how did it begin to cohere into a book project?
That's kind of interesting. John was, by his own admission, a frustrated librarian, and he had two offices that he used. It kind of, you know, book collections, record collections, picture collections, and then also he collected his own personal original material. And he had these spiral-bound staff paper notebooks that he kept in this file drawer. And he showed me the numbering system. He's like, all right. And then he showed me the file system that he had, this 3x5 card filing system. He showed me how the names on the cards would coincide with, you know, okay, so that comes to journal number 58, page whatever. So that means you go in here and then look in this drawer here, and that's going to be in there. Which was, you know, I don't know, foretelling the future, maybe. But I mean, I know in his heart he was hoping that something like this would happen. You know, he put together this collection of material, you know, not just for himself, but I think for other people to enjoy and to use, you know, not only his own original material, but also the wealth of recordings that he had and sheet music and stuff from, you know, other fiddle players from the past. But so, you know, he had these 68 volumes of spiral-bound notebooks that he had written in over the course of nearly 20 years up until his passing. And so then I was, you know, keeping in touch with Katie, his daughter. And, you know, we'd been talking about wanting to dive into this and make it into a book. And you know, it finally happened. And I started the rather lengthy process of diving through, you know, hundreds and hundreds of these fiddle tunes that John wrote over the years.
Which had only existed in hand-transcribed, handwritten music format, right? He didn't record these as he went?
Maybe. I mean, he probably had some recorded versions of it, but that, you know, there are hundreds and hundreds of hours of tapes. So, I mean, there's no telling what he recorded and what he didn't. At this point, I don't know, but they were, all the stuff that I was going through were his handwritten transcriptions. You know, he was very visually oriented. You know, he was a commercially trained artist, and so he took, once he learned how to write music in, you know, his 40s, he took great pride in kind of the artistic format of music notation and titling and just the aesthetic of it. And, it, you know, it's a work of art in its own right, you know, the way he wrote music.
I was going to ask you to make sure to describe that because it's so old world, almost calligraphic and so elegant. How much of his original, you know, hand-drawn manuscripts do we see in this book?
The entire thing is all John's pen. And that's the coolest. Yeah, I mean, this book is really like a peek into John's mind. And like you really get to know him through the book because, I mean, there's nothing that isn't him. You know, all the drawings, there's tons of drawings in it that he did. And all of the tunes are handwritten straight out of his journals. You know, all have his beautiful calligraphic titles on the top. And then interviews of people that, you know, were around John and telling stories about his music. And, I mean, it's a real peek into the getting to know John. And, you know, in the process of going through these notebooks, I really... It was like hanging out with the guy again. It was in a very real kind of way. It's kind of bizarre at times.
Wow. When you had to choose 176 tunes out of a larger number, what was that process like as you played them? Were you looking for tunes that for, you know, what were your criteria? And of course, these are tunes that are now going to be in a more official way available for young fiddle players to study and practice like repertoire and add to the repertoire. So I'm sure you were looking for tunes that had, you know, that extra measure of integrity and timelessness.
Yeah. I mean, really it's just, it just comes down to what strikes your fancy. And now John had a, kind of a grading system that was in place. And, you know, a lot of he had 1-star tunes or 2-star tunes, and then some, he didn't put any stars on. But a lot of the tunes that you'll see in the book have 2 stars by them, and those are the tunes that he particularly liked and the ones that we liked too. But then there are tunes that he didn't put a star next to that we really liked for some reason or the other. And I say we, I'm not, you know, I played these with, you know, I made selections and then I played the tunes together with Katie and Greg Reisch, who helped with the book as well. So we played through these tunes and then, you know, made a final selection. You know, we didn't want too many in one key. We didn't want, you know, we want a kind of a nice cross section of some of his stuff that sounded like old time music and some of the stuff that was definitely Hartfordian, you know, stuff that couldn't be, that was definitely him.
So you are going to send me one tune that you've, that you're playing. So we have a sample. Can you tell me what you're going to send and what and why, what that one tune maybe speaks to?
Yeah, I was going to send you one called John Sell Your Fiddle, which, I mean, it's a hilarious title, I think. But it's it just shows what a student of old-time fiddle John was. And to the very end, he was studying, you know, just working like a Trojan to learn more about the instrument and learn more about the history of it and just get deeper and deeper into the nuances and minutiae of fiddling. And I think this is a really good example of how he captured the essence of like Kentucky old time fiddle, but then, you know, put a quirky title on it that's unmistakably Hartford, John Sell Your Fiddle. You know, no, it's probably something, I don't know, somebody said to him or his wife or something, which you got tired of hearing him practice along with the metronome, you know, wish you'd sell that fiddle. Cause John was, he was a compulsive practicer. You know, he had a Dr. Beat metronome on, you know, hours a day. So, you know, to the chagrin of his people that shared his house with him.
Why do you think that he wasn't more trusting of his own sense of time after all those years of being such an extraordinary musician?
I don't know that it was not that he didn't trust his sense of time. I think it just allowed him the freedom to experiment with time, because John was, I mean, he had this incredible innate sense of rhythm that stemmed from his dancing on stage that he did, his shuffle step. And I mean, you could set your watch by it. It was just, you know, a wonderful, right in the middle sense of time. You know, it didn't rush and didn't drag. But John liked to experiment with the beat, and so he'd like to push 1 week, and he'd stay ahead of the beat by, you know, a nanosecond. Or then the next week he'd decide he'd want to drag the beat. So it was really more of just a compass of true north, and then he would just experiment with it just to be a student of the fiddle, you know, and just to see what sounds good and to experiment, and then he'd record it and see what it sounded like. And you know, there's hours where we would just sit around and he would, you know, turn on the Dr. Beat and, you know, we'd just pass tunes back together. It was just, you know, the two of us just playing along with them, along with the metronome.
Well, what an extraordinary project to be involved in. And you were really the most natural choice to do it. It's an extension of knowing him. But what insights have you carried away from this project and a kind of reacquainting yourself with John and his spirit, as you said, that's tracking into your own life as an artist?
Well, it just reaffirmed to me something that I've been relearning, is that it's just that for an artist to put together any collection of material, what you end up seeing is probably, you know, 10% or less of what they actually created. I mean, there's just a mountain of other material behind the good stuff that they release that, you know, doesn't eventually make the grade. You know, it's just the work that you have to get there for the cream to rise to the top. You know, it's not all going to be Gentle on My Mind. You know, it's going to be, you know, songs that aren't great. You know, tunes that aren't great, tunes that are just kind of whatever. But, you know, you have to get those out and be okay with getting those out for the good ones to emerge. And, you know, going through, I mean, this is essentially John's journal, you know, because he wrote in it every day. Each title had the significance of what was going on that particular day. It had the date, it had the location. So it was just what this guy was going through all the time, you know, 2 and 3 tunes written a day. I mean, you could track his mood by it. You know, you could track what was going on, how he was feeling. And then it's just like, how much does a person actually have to work to get the good stuff out? And the answer is a lot. A gargantuan amount of work has to go into, you know, any kind of artistic endeavor. And that's the stuff nobody really sees, but I got to see behind the scenes of one of the greatest composers that, like, oh yeah, all right, everything's not great, you know? It's like there's just some stuff that just gets written, and it's fine. You know, you move on, you keep going, and you don't have to judge things immediately. You just write it just to write it, and you get it out, and it's fine, and it's over. And you move on, and you write something else, and maybe that next one will be great. But that's what I saw firsthand and learned from, and it was very inspirational for me, because I was like, oh, okay, you know, not everything you wrote was amazing. And
it sounds like you upped your own tempo of your own writing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I started taking inspiration from that and writing a bunch of fiddle tunes myself, and then that transformed into writing songs and writing a lot of songs. And I ended up, you know, writing a great output of songs, not an output of great songs, but a great output of songs, and that culminated into a record I just am finishing recording now of material that, you know, is original material that I believe was inspired from writing or from helping to create this book, or to put together this book of John's material.